the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, covering, of course, the Arizona Cardinals, and it is week 12. It is Cardinals-Seahawks. This is episode 616, and this is the first two preview shows that we're going to have this week. Seth and I looked at the bye week. We made some predictions for the NFC West and the remaining games left on the schedule as the Cardinals sit at 6-4 atop the division, surprisingly so, with the rest of the NFC West all bunched together at 5-5. They come out of the bye week to play the Seattle Seahawks, and in this episode of the show, a guy you might recognize in terms of name, I've got Cole Musgrove, now in the position as the managing editor of Seahawks Wire, our sister site in the NFC West, over up in the Pacific Northwest. Cole, you've been on with us a couple of times to preview the season. Thank you for joining me, and welcome officially to the Editors Club, if there's any sort of club that anyone would want to belong to, but we're part of it.
We are. You know, I think we should get some members-only jackets.
But you know, they can see because we don't do video on the podcasts, but
it'd be, you know, it's just like
we would feel good.
Closet. Yeah,
yes, we,
yeah,
we would feel good.
100%. We would know.
We would know. So,
hey, Jess, thank you so much for having me on.
Yes, and I appreciate you coming on. Now, the Seahawks have had an interesting season. So we want to take back through kind of the start of the season. Obviously, when we have had Tim Weaver on before the year to kind of preview the year, talking about Mike McDonald, they came out gangbusters 3-0, but now things have kind of come down to earth a little bit. They lost 5 out of the last 7. Can you take us through, Cole, kind of the what led to the fast start? What were the major reasons for that? And then what kind of has happened since then?
So the fast start, and it's interesting you mentioned fast start, because in those games, the Seahawks didn't look exactly like world beaters. I mean, that first Broncos game, they had two safeties in the first half. They had some muffed punts, some weird interceptions, but then ultimately just kind of took over the Dolphins. They got it to a 17-0 lead, and then kind of took the foot off the gas and took it to overtime against the Patriots. The biggest thing, as looking back now, in that first 3-0 start, the Seahawks were playing a bunch of tomato cans. I mean, they had Bo Nix in his first start as a rookie. I mean, I know Bo Nix is tearing it up right now, but he certainly was not in his first game as a pro in Seattle. Then they had Jacoby Brissett, who is he's fine backup, but he's no longer starting. And then they had the Dolphins carousel of not just their backup, but then their third stringer, Tim Boyle, was playing it at some point. So they were playing. I mean, they were certainly not playing Pro Bowlers by any stretch of the imagination. Then they hit the Bills and the Lions. And I know the Niners are struggling, but then they hit the Niners when they were getting hot, the Rams on their hot streak. And they kind of got there's still some talent gap. I mean, I know the Seahawks have never gone into a full-blown rebuild. That's just not in John Schneider's DNA. But it's still a roster in transition. I mean, we have a first-year head coach, new staff, getting his guys involved in the system. So, yeah, there were some serious growing pains. Now, that being said, last two games, defense finally seems to be kind of settling back in, kind of starting to look like what we saw in the beginning of the season, albeit against much more quality opponents.
Geno Smith leading the NFL in passing, but also, unfortunately, leading the NFL in interceptions. How would you characterize Geno's play this year? Because he's kind of, I mean, if you look back to the first post-Russell Wilson year, he looked like he was a legitimate MVP candidate for probably 2/3 of that first season, and since then has kind of come down to not game manager, but also not like efficient, solid guy. Where would you rate his season so far? Because it kind of looks like he single-handedly got them that win over San Francisco at the end of last week.
Yeah, so Geno Smith, I would actually go on a limb, and I know that if you just look at the raw numbers, especially that number 11 interception number, not great. You actually watch the games, Geno is playing at a pretty high level, so I would characterize his season as being pretty good, actually. He is dealing with the worst offensive line in football. Certainly had one of the worst right side of this line with, third string right tackle for the first half of the season. Now it's a little better with Abe Lucas back. Some of his interceptions, I know this is kind of the old adage, the quarterback, you sign the check with every pass you throw, but a lot of them, drop pass intercepted or tipped ball intercepted, receiver run the wrong route. I mean, I know that reflects poorly on Geno, but watching him, week in, week out, he's making a lot happen when there's not a lot there. So I know it's been a little up and down. I know he was atrocious against the Rams, of which he actually apologized post game for that. But overall, I would say he's having a pretty good season. That's not necessarily being reflected in all the stats.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Good to see Abe Lucas back. Has he kind of solidified things, and is he finally in a place health-wise where you feel like he can play kind of the rest of the year?
Gosh, I hope so. I mean, health has become a considerable issue with him already in his career. It's only year three, and he's already missed the first nine games of this season. He only played in, a handful last year, and he missed the first nine games of the season from a knee surgery he had in January that was meant to just kind of clean things up. So I'd like to believe that that's all it took, and he's finally able to go. He certainly played incredibly well. Obviously not exactly a tough, not exactly an easy situation having your first game against Nick Bosa, but he held his own. He played more snaps than I think even head coach Mike McDonald was planning to play him. So that's just kind of be a fingers crossed situation. I wish I could say health wise he's good to go, but when you've already missed this much time in your career and you're only 3 years in, it's going to be something to monitor.
Ken Walker, missed a couple of games this season. His rookie season, super explosive. Last year was more workmanlike. This year, statistically, it looks pretty workmanlike again. Where is he at? Because when I remember as a rookie, and at the time, defensive coordinator Vance Joseph looked at him as a special runner. What do you say about him in I was it year it's year three, right, with him?
Yes, it is.
Where is he? I know that Zach Charbonnet gets a decent amount of touches, but what has been with Ken Walker? Where is he at in his development and his impact offensively?
Ken Walker is an absolute stud. I'm incredibly high on this guy. He's someone who is a threat to take it to the house anytime he touches the ball, provided, again, the offensive line that gets no push can actually open something up for him. The biggest frustration with Kenneth Walker hasn't been with Kenneth Walker this year. It's with new offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb, who's had a few games where he just kind of seems to forget that Ken Walker is healthy and in the lineup. I mean, there was a game not too long ago, I believe it was the Giants game. He only touched the ball five times.
Ooh.
That is not a winning recipe. There's some frustration. I mean, Grubb, I think, has been for the most part much clear upgrade over our previous offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. And if there's any Bears fans listening, I'm sure they can attest to the Shane Waldron experience. But there's still some issues here or there where the Seahawks just are too quick to abandon the run when they don't need to. Now, granted, that could be two. That again, that could be twofold. The offensive line is not giving them many options to do a little ground and pound action like I think that they want to.
Makes sense. You're obviously with the passing yardage production, you're getting good numbers. Jackson Smith and Njigba leading the way with 60 catches and 678 yards. DK Metcalf has got over 600 yards. Tyler Lockett approaching, even at age 32, approaching 475 yards. Still looks like he's playing really, really well. You get Zach Charbonnet. He plays. Do they do a? Does Seattle do a kind of a platoon type situation, like a shared carrier? Or does Charbonnet more do more on passing downs than Walker?
Charbonnet is kind of the more physical runner. So I think that if they would truly commit, it could have a really good thunder and lightning situation going on. Typically, you know, they use Charbonnet in short yardage situations, goal line. Kenneth Walker is kind of more of the home run hitter. Charbonnet, again, just change of pace, physical runner. I personally love the duo. I think it's a great combo to have. And Charbonnet has shown that without Kenneth Walker, he can still be an impact runner.
Okay. Defensively, Mike McDonald obviously coming over from Baltimore, where he put together one incredible defense. Statistically, they're sitting in the bottom half. Like, you would know that 22nd in yards allowed, 21st in points allowed. They are 15th against the pass, and not so great against the run, 27th against the run, also nearly 5 yards a carry. What has been the story defensively? It's interesting because it's not rare that we go this long without seeing the Seahawks, and now we get to see them two of the next 3 weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see this version of Seattle compared to what they would have been early in the season.
Well, isn't it kind of funny? I mean, obviously, when the schedule comes out, every fan, every writer, every editor, every media person pours over the schedule like it's scripture, right? They're circling, well, who's, you know, what games do you want to see the most? When do you see your division opponents? When's your bye week? And despite that, I found myself the other day going like, gosh, do we even play the Cardinals this year?
really, really late.
And then it's like, oh, here's the Cardinals. Oh, here's the Cardinals again. Like, it's almost like the schedulers are like, oh, crap, we got to schedule these two. Jokes aside there. Defensively, what's the biggest change the Seahawks have made is they completely have retooled their linebacker position. They went into the season with Terrell Dodson and Jerome Baker. They went cheap, you know, or budget, I should say. They let Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks walk. And they went with two veterans on one-year deals, and neither of those guys are on the Seahawks right now. Yeah. Jerome Baker was gone in a trade to get Ernest Jones IV, who has been an absolute revelation. In 3 games, he already has 37 total tackles.
Ernest Jones, he makes no sense because, like, he was really good with the Rams. They trade him to Tennessee, and then Tennessee wants to get rid of him. I don't get it. Because production-wise, he's a really good. He's a really good guy in space.
Oh, my gosh. 100%. He's incredible. And then with Terrell Dodson, right before the Niners game, they just cut him. And they cut him, and they decided we're going to go with our rookie from UTEP, Tyrese Knight. And the two of them just completely shut down San Francisco's rushing attack. Okay. So they got better at linebacker. They're using Draymond Jones a little bit better. Overall numbers not looking great because they kept getting gashed by the Bills and the Niners earlier in the year. And then the New York Giants, of all teams, their third stringer looked like the reincarnation of Walter Payton against us for some reason. So the Seahawks have kind of done a little bit of retooling, and it's worked out really well. But what they need to improve on is they're just not getting turnovers. They're just not generating enough of them, which is very unusual to see from a Seahawks team. I mean, I know they had an interception last week, but it feels like these turnovers are coming too few and too far between.
Derek Hall, I don't know anything about that guy. He's the leading sacker, six sacks, two forced fumbles, a fumble recovery for a touchdown, 12 quarterback hits, tackled 4 tackles for loss. Who is that guy?
Well, he's a guy that after year one, many people thought, what's he even doing on this team? You know, I'll give a comparison. Boye Mafe, rookie year, showed flashes. You're like, okay, there's something there. Year two, oh, there it is. Stud pass rusher, looks incredible. Derek Hall's kind of having the Boye Mafe experience, only far more extreme on both ends. Again, went from a guy that we thought, you know, he's probably not going to make the team much longer. New staff might be quick to cut bait, but they are getting the most out of him, and or maybe he's just a late bloomer in the NFL, and he is just absolutely killing it. He is punishing offensive lines and quarterbacks.
That the defensive line, some pretty named Leonard Williams. You've got Jaron Reed, who's on his, what is it? Is his second or a third stint with the Seahawks? And then they add Byron Murphy in the first round. What has been the story with the defensive line? You mentioned the linebacker issues. Has there been an adjustment with that defensive line? Because I would have figured looking at that they would have been better against the run. Or was that more a case it was because of the linebacker play, because schematically that's who's supposed to make those plays?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of a little column A, a little column B, but also the Seahawks defensive line had some serious injury issues kind of in the first part of the season. I mean, Leonard Williams was out, missed a game. Boye Mafe missed a game. Our first-round rookie, he missed several games with a hamstring issue. So now that they're kind of starting to get a little bit healthier and getting back in there, Byron Murphy is back, and it's again, they're starting to make their presence felt in a big way.
The defensive secondary, a couple of really talented young guys, Enrique Woolen and Devon Witherspoon. How are they in this new defense?
Devon Witherspoon's having a quietly excellent year. Again, it's a situation where, numbers aren't necessarily there. It's kind of hard to see, judge an impact of a player who's, not recording tons of interceptions, because that's typically how we, judge cornerbacks these days. But he is a maniac. He's a tackling machine. He makes his presence felt every time he steps on the field. I mean, that interception I mentioned against the Niners, it's because he deflected a pass to Christian McCaffrey. Reek Woolen, it's been a little up and down. Certainly huge improvement over his sophomore season, which saw him actually get benched at one point. He's back to his usual ball hawking ways. He had a rough performance against the Rams, but everybody has a rough performance against the Rams if you're wearing a Seahawks uniform. I guess that's just how it goes. that's kind of how the NFC West cycle is. Hawks usually beat the Niners, Niners beat the Rams, Rams beat the Seahawks, and then the Cardinals are just there to beat anybody.
And the Cardinals beat Seattle at home. They beat them in Seattle. That's kind of the kryptonite that they've got. It's been five games. The Seahawks have won five in a row, but that's it for years. Back before it was Lumenfield and CenturyLink, is that Seattle was nearly unbeatable there, except when the Cardinals came to town for some reason.
Yeah, and it makes no sense. I mean, other than just division, no one knows you like your rivals do. But again, the team that plays in the dome in the desert always comes to Seattle in December when it's cold, wet, and rainy, and then beats us. It never made sense. And usually those are the games that the Seahawks just look the sloppiest. So I don't know what the deal is there. But now it's been a characteristic winning streak in this rivalry, because usually, like I said, these teams split. They're competitive against each other. But then again, even in this five-game winning streak, it's not like the Seahawks have just been dog-walking the Cardinals. I know the Cardinals have been down for the last couple of years, but Matt Prater makes one of two field goals last year. This is not a five-game winning streak in Seattle.
He was following the script, so we can get Marvin Harrison.
Yes.
I think you wondered about that. I mean, everyone, honestly, at that point, while a win would have been nice, it would have been devastating to lose the fourth pick and to miss out on Marv. So we've always joked that Prater knew the script. He understood the assignment, except for that kick. He's now 40 years old. Mm-hmm. That was his very first missed game-tying, game-winning kick in the final 2 minutes of a game. The first he'd ever missed.
Wow. I mean, I did not know that. That actually is just blowing my mind.
Wild number. He's one of the most clutch kickers of all time. And that's where, like, you look at that. Yeah, he understood the assignment. Then you're like, wait a minute. Did he just get old? That's like, did he just suddenly get over the hill? No, he's been good, except he's been hurt for the last few weeks, and now we have we have a question, is that do we even bring him back off of IR because of how Chatter Island's done? Because Prater's he's 40 and he's a free agent after this season. I'm like, do you just roll Island, or do you bring back Prater to kick for the rest of the season, maybe the postseason? And then they're guaranteed going to lose Ryland. As soon as if they cut him, someone else is picking him up because he's been so great. Mm-hmm. So, and then kickers, the Cardinals are left with no kicker.
Kickers are weird, man. Like you'll get a guy like Matt Prater or Adam Vinatieri, who's semifinals for the Hall of Fame this year. They'll be good forever and ever and ever. And then all of a sudden, boom, they run into the age wall out of nowhere. Yeah. Even Justin Tucker, we might be seeing it with him right now.
Yeah.
Also it's pretty funny. Like his standard was, Justin Tucker's standard was so high that now he's
mere mortal.
He's just an average kicker now. And everyone's like, he's washed. I'm like, oh, so he's still like, you know, a starting kicker in the NFL.
Yes. All right. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about this game, these matchups, what we're looking for in this game. It's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web with Cole Musgrove from SeahawksWire.com, our sister site of the NFL Wire of USA Today. Talking Cardinals, Seahawks. Looking at this game, Seahawks 5-5, Cardinals 6-4. Where do you think that the Seahawks match up favorably against Arizona?
Well, the biggest thing is, I think the Seahawks match up well against any secondary in the NFL when you have DK Metcalf, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and Tyler Lockett. So that is every time I do a behind enemy lines talking to other editors, they always say the exact same thing, which is, we don't know how we're going to be able to slow down the Seattle's receiving core. So that certainly is, I think, the biggest advantage that Seattle has over Arizona. Now, obviously, Arizona can counter with Marvin Harrison Jr. But I think that's where the Seahawks have a clear edge.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is yet another receiver test for the Cardinals, because in recent weeks they faced Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson. Last week they faced the Bears trio, and they faced Miami's Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. They have not been hurt. They've not been, like, the team's great receivers have not had a real impact in those games that the Cardinals have faced. So it's going to be interesting to see if that continues. The Cardinals defensively have been surprisingly all right. Granted, it's the home games. They haven't allowed a touchdown in their last three home games. They're obviously on the road, but they've been playing a kind of a bend don't break type of defense. They don't generate much pass rush. The game against the Bears, the game against the Rams really skew their sacks, because 11 of the sacks that they have this season come in those two games, and they were facing backup and third string tackles they were facing, and they took advantage. And they're not going to have that this week because Lucas is playing. Charles Cross is playing, as far as we know, unless something happens in the next couple of days. So that'll be interesting. I look at the 4.8 yards per run that the Seahawks are allowing, and I think that's going to be because the Cardinals, what they've sort of become offensively, and the passing game has opened up. Kyler's been playing extremely high level. I feel at this point, the way the Cardinals are playing offensively, there really isn't a team that stops them. There's no one that is shutting them down. When they struggle, it is their own mistakes. So I think this will come down to which defense makes a stop or which offense makes a mistake, I think, is kind of how this lines up, because I think the Cardinals will be able to move the ball against Seattle. The Cardinals are not a great run defense team. They're not great against the pass. Although points per game, they're quietly moved up to the top half of the league because they're now 13th in points allowed, as opposed to the late 20s where they were. I mean, but giving up only 6 and 9 points, 15 total points in their last 2 weeks will do that. But yeah, I'm interested to see how that works, because I don't feel the Cardinals are a dominant defense. They are at best a capable defense if, one, they play fiercely, and two, they stick exactly to their assignment. They are not talented enough to do anything but stay within the scheme. And that means they're going to give up a few yards down the field. It's going to look like teams are going to score, and then they'll somehow hold them to a field goal, or, you know, where analytics go and then teams go for it on fourth down and they get a fourth down stop that changes the momentum. The Cardinals can move the ball. Yeah, how have the Seahawks done against teams with quarterbacks who can move?
Not great. the Seahawks pass rush has been inconsistent at best. When they're on, they are just as suffocating as any team in the NFL. Unfortunately, when they have quarterbacks who can move around a little bit, they have a hard time bringing them down. They got to Brock Purdy a little bit last week, which was a huge improvement over getting to him not at all in the first meeting, but they struggled to get Josh Allen. They struggled to get any kind of quarterback who can run even a little bit, which, of course, not a great sign for when you're having Kyler Murray. This will be, you know, kind of speaking of tests, this will be another test for the Seattle Seahawks. The defense looked really good against the Rams, except for the last drive in overtime. They totally shut the 49ers down for Brock Purdy-led game where the Niners had under 300 yards of offense. But now they have yet another tough task with the Arizona Cardinals, who probably have the most consistent offense out of the three of those teams we've mentioned. It'll be a good test to see if the Seahawks defensive turnaround is actually legit, or were they benefiting from two inconsistent teams in San Francisco and Los Angeles who don't necessarily look like they want to win that many games this year.
They are. Neither one of those teams makes sense right now. The 49ers. No. The 49ers just keep getting nicked up, and they just can't get out of their own way, it feels like. And for me, it looks like they are a classic case of Super Bowl hangover.
Totally.
It's 100% that. And the Rams, they're like, oh, wow, you're good. Oh, you're not good. I don't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense at all.
The Rams are so perpetually frustrating in the sense that every time you think they're dead and out and this is it, they're done, whether it's week to week or even in game, they're survivors. You know, I don't use the term cockroach in a derogatory sense in this, but they just find a way to just keep coming back. It's incredible. Frustrating, beyond frustrating, that they can never just seem to stay dead, but here we are. That's just good coaching. They got good players.
The rush guys. You've got Draymond Jones, Derek Hall, Boye Mafe. Where do they typically line up in terms against the opposing offensive line? Do you get Hall or Jones more over right tackle, left tackle?
Usually we have, you know, Jones kind of on the outside. Usually he's kind of had a lot of success over right tackle. At least that's what he, you know, they started using him there more against San Francisco. Okay. And he just, you know, he bullied them.
And Hall will line up again, probably more so against Paris Johnson and Boye Mafe. Boye Mafe, I've seen him used in a number of ways, right? They move him around in rush situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's kind of wherever they need him to be, and whatever matchup they can create best for him to wreak havoc.
Are we going to get more Witherspoon or Woolen on Marv, likely?
Usually, you're probably going to have more Woolen, because Witherspoon usually is playing slot.
Okay.
And usually...
So he could, we could see a lot of Witherspoon then on Marv, because they do like to move Marv inside sometimes. So they move him around a little bit. So I think it looks like we might get some of all of it.
Oh, I mean, I for one can't wait for those battles between, you know, whether it's Marv versus Woolen or Witherspoon. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be good television. You know, certainly I'm happy to have Marvin Harrison back in my fantasy lineup this week, even if it is going against the Seahawks.
I've got a question then for that. Are you starting him?
To be determined. I you know what? I may be forced to because I got some unfortunate what is it? So six buys this week. So
oh no.
I may not have a choice.
Because that's one of those ultimate tests. I'm like, they're playing your team, but he's on your fantasy team. How much do you trust your team and how much do you want to win your fantasy matchup? That is the...
Yes. Well, all I'm saying is if Ja'Marr Chase was playing this week, he would be getting the start.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, honestly, you should probably start Ja'Marr Chase over almost all the receivers, given the option. Good. Any other matchups in particular that you're going to have your eyes on in this game?
Really, to me, I think I know this is a, you know, maybe this is just kind of a cop out answer, and maybe it's not even really a matchup because the quarterbacks never take the field at the same time. But really, I think we're in for a good quarterback game here. Kyler Murray has developed remarkably this year. And certainly he's evolved past just the one read, take off and run kind of guy. So he has turned into a legitimate threat. Geno, like I said, is playing much better than I think his interception numbers would lead folks to believe. And he could certainly move a little bit better than I think people realize. So that touchdown run probably opened some eyes last week. So really,
Geno's always been able to move. Even at his age, I think that's one thing you don't move. Like, maybe you don't have the same first step and you don't stop as quickly, but guys with speed always have speed. And he always could run.
Well, the thing about Geno, I mean, he's 34, but he's kind of a young 34 because he spent a lot of years not taking hits on the sideline, backing up Russ and Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers.
That's what the O-line is. The O-line is just, you know, making sure he's getting his career in. Isn't that kind of the line we're going to use then for that O-line? They're just making sure that he gets a full NFL career of hits since he spent so long not getting hits.
I think he would appreciate that they don't need to speed the clock up so quick.
Awesome. Let's move on. Coming up next on the Rise of Secret podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on and talk about predictions and picks that we have this game. That's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Secret podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. This is where we make our predictions, and this is a game I'm not too sure. And also, odds makers aren't too sure on because the Seahawks opened as 1-point favorites. And they are now 1-point underdogs. The line, the spread moved a point over for them on the money line rather than the, it's not even odds at 110 each. The Seahawks were minus 115 to start the week of the Cardinals, minus 105. They have flipped. What do you expect to see for this kind of in this game? I'm guessing that we both are expecting something slightly more higher scoring.
Yeah, I think, both, except the test for me is, you know, can the Seahawks defense be legit like we've seen? I need to see more evidence for me to be able to be like, yeah, it's fixed. It's totally good to go. Run defense, there's still concerns here or there. It's gotten way better. I'm going to need to see them have a little more takeaways as well. I think it's going to be a little higher scoring. I think the Seahawks have kind of had Arizona's number for the last few games. Obviously, we saw the Niners had the Seahawks number and that switched. So obviously that can happen. That can change at any point. But I think the Seahawks got a little mojo going after that big win over San Francisco. Cardinals coming off a bye might be a little rusty. I say Seahawks win 30-27.
Ooh, ooh. And you know what that means if the Seahawks win, right?
What does
They're
it mean?
In first They're place.
In first place.
They're back in first place.
Well, then, of
place.
Course, they need... Of course, they need the Rams to lose to the Eagles. Isn't that crazy how the NFC West, I mean, it's the only division of football without a team with a losing record, at least for right now.
That's crazy. That is crazy. I'd be happy to let at least one team do that this next week, if not three teams.
Yeah, I wonder which teams you're talking about.
I think the Cardinals are locked in. I do expect a close game. I do expect a close game, but I think I'm going to say it's going to be, 34-31 Cardinals. And maybe this time it's going to be the Cardinals' fourth game winning field goal at the end of the game to win it this time around. I don't know. I like personally the matchup because I think the Cardinals are playing really well on both sides of the ball, and they're coming off a bye. And I think that the getting that if they win this game, like winning one of the two games against Seattle, I really puts them in a good position. Like if they win this week, they're 3-0 in the division. No one will have a head to head over them because they will have beaten each team once. And yeah, that would go a long way to carry them into the game they have next week against Minnesota. Do you think it's going to be more passing or more running? Is it going to be Geno doing his thing for Seattle? That's pretty much what it's been most of the year. Or do you think it's going to be? Do you think it'll be for the Cardinals? Do you think it's more Kyler or Connor?
Probably going to be more Kyler. Like I said, Ernest Jones and Tyrese Knight have shown that, at least, again, they've shown that they are a huge improvement at linebacker. But the pass rush, hard time bringing down, speedy, mobile quarterback. So I think Kyler is going to have a pretty good day rushing. I think if the Cardinals are allowed to just run rampant on offense, it's going to be a long afternoon for the Seahawks. The Seahawks can hold them to under 30. I like Seattle's chances.
And the Cardinals have hit the 30 mark twice this season against the Jets and against the Rams. So that would be something. That would be something. Anything else you predict will happen this week?
Well, I'm going to say this. Geno Smith and the Seahawks offense is certainly a tougher nut to crack than the Chicago Bears and the washed-up corpse of Aaron Rodgers. So I think certainly
I'm not saying no touchdowns. That's they're not going to give up just 9 or just 6. This will be a fun kind of like that Miami game, which was 28-27. Ooh, yes. And Geno, yeah, I think Geno will probably will he hit his over? They've got it set right now at 251.5 for passing yards. I like Kyler's over it, because it's only 217 is what they have him for that. But I guess that will be impacted by the rushing, the run game. And we've got 70.5 yards is what they've set for Connor, 64.5 for Ken Walker, and nothing for Charbonnet. Geno, 14.5, Kyler, 27.5. I think definitely take Geno on the other, because Geno has he taken much up? Because I feel like that's one run. I think that's one run, and he hits the over.
Yeah. Certainly Geno is not one to just naturally take off and run unless there is a clear lane. I'd say so.
Awesome. Any turnovers? You predict any turnovers in this game?
Oh, yeah. The Seahawks, I think Geno, at this point, him throwing another interception, it's becoming par for the course.
That's true. They have turnovers in 8 of 10 games, and they have multiple turnovers in 6 of them. Although the defense has taken the ball away at least once in 4 straight games and 5 out of the last 6. So that's – and let's see – okay, they've got a win. It's even in turnovers. They lose the turnover. Okay, we've got Seahawks play pretty much even to the money stat. Win the turnover battle, win. Lose the turnover battle, lose. Even, and it's a toss-up. So that'll probably be the breaking point in the game. Whoever takes it away more will win the game.
Absolutely. And Seahawks special teams is a little shaky at times. For some reason, their getting kicks blocked and PATs, and every time D Williams catches a punt or kick, it's hold your breath time.
I like that.
So I think.
I mean, I understand it's frightening and frustrating when you're watching it, but you know, as much as I like Cole, I don't like the Seahawks. So oh man, stuff going wrong for Seattle. Oh no.
You know, it's funny. It's the kind of the vibe with the 12th man up here is we don't like the Cardinals when we play the Cardinals. Duh, nobody does. But it's the one NFC West team that nobody really, I don't want to say nobody cares about.
It's because
we don't
bad.
Just nobody has any hard feelings against the Cardinals. And I think
it's been a while because the Arians era with Pete Carroll, it was like that. There was a lot of dislike between the two teams.
Arians was he's the only person that's made the Cardinals unlikable up here. That was he was someone we'd love to watch beat.
Awesome, man. That was Cole Musgrove from the Seahawks Wire. You can catch his stuff, of course. Go over to the Seahawks Wire, click on his stuff, and then come back and click on my stuff, because that's where you honestly, even though Seth got Revenge of the Birds, but you honestly, and yes, go click on Revenge of the Birds stuff. But if you need Seahawks coverage and Cardinals coverage, there ain't nobody doing it better than the two of us over at Cards Wire and Seahawks Wire. Not to pat myself on the back, but I know I write more than anyone else on the Cardinals beat. There's no one that writes more than I do. And Cole kills it over the Seahawks Wire. You're just straight Cole Musgrove on the Bird app that's now an X app, right?
Yes. Well, it's at Cole Musgrove 23.
And I don't know if you're still doing that. If you ever follow him during baseball season, he is the most optimistic Mariners fan you will find. And so, like, at the beginning of the season, they're going to be 162-0. They lose again, they're going to be 161-1.
I hope I can find that optimism again, but this year kind of might have broken me a little bit.
Oh, hey, keep it up, man. Keep it up for sure. That's Cole Musgrove again. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Cole, for being on the show again. We will hopefully we can do this in a couple of weeks and
absolutely and, I look forward to
and
it.
You know, and maybe have something different to talk about. I don't know, because you know, how are we gonna break things down in 2 weeks as opposed to now? We'll figure it out. That's Cole Musgrove. Thanks for listening, everybody. Seth and I will be back tomorrow with our review show. If not tomorrow, it'll be later in the week. Depends on whether we get together and whether the odds are up for the props. So that's Cole Musgrove. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise of Seahawks podcast. We'll be back again soon. Thank you for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.